Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, unfortunately, this is going to be one of a handful of our last shows ever because, according to NBA Twitter, Alex Caruso is going to end the league.
Yeah, he's ruining all of it by himself.
Single-handedly ruining the league. It has nothing to do with superstars sitting out while they're healthy. It has nothing to do with the Golden State Warriors getting a national TV game a week while they are employing a G League team. It has nothing to do with cord cutting. It has nothing to do with the Eastern and the bottom of both conferences being bad, general tanking and its effects on the league. Nothing to do with that. It's just Alex Caruso. That is why he is the only reason why ratings are down.
I would argue that just goes to show how amazing he is, thusly proving our point that he belongs in the All-Star game.
I agree. Do you think if Alex Caruso played in the All-Star game, nobody would watch?
Yeah, I think there would be a national boycott, right? Just Laker fans, as it should be.
Today's show, we are actually going to talk about that a little bit because it's been bothering me. Like, all season long, it's been annoying me how pissed people get at Alex Caruso getting attention. We are also going to talk about the latest on Anthony Davis's ass and whether or not the Lakers are being smart about this and whether or not Anthony Davis is being smart about this. And then finally, in the last segment, we're going to answer your guys' questions. Again, though, we start with Alex Caruso. And he, as things stand right now, according to the latest All-Star votes that have come out, he is polling at sixth amongst backcourt players in the Western Conference. This would mean absolutely nothing. It means absolutely nothing. And yet people are up in arms about it. What's been your response? What's your general stance on Alex Caruso and the amount of attention he gets, the backlash to the backlash, all that stuff?
I think it's, first of all, it's just not that serious. Like, if you are really getting upset about stuff like that, like, you need to reevaluate kind of how you view all of this.
Go cover politics. Like, if you hate fun that much, go cover, like, local politics and infrastructure and microeconomics, golf, like go.
Bro, and like, hell, in politics, the whole marketing and getting people to know your name and all that, that's the ultimate name of that game, yeah. Right? So like, that's even more, yeah. Yeah, it's not that serious. Caruso, it's kind of the only way it bothers me a little bit is that Caruso is actually a really good player, yeah. Like, and he does a lot of the, he would be a hipster Twitter favorite because he's a guy that you can root for, and it shows how smart you are because you see, yeah, all the things, quote unquote, that don't show up in the box score, mm-hmm, and, you know, a good screen, a good cut. You feel good about yourself because you can see all this stuff that other people can't see, right? Yep. And, like, he would be a darling of those
if he was types for, like, of people. If he was on the Spurs.
Right, and his net rating, all his, like,
or the Celtics, you know, or
stuff like that. He's got all these analytic data that is really flattering toward him. He, yeah, would be really embraced as that kind of guy if he played elsewhere, right? I ultimately don't care that much. They, like, everybody's had a really good time kind of kicking the Lakers while they're down over the last 6 years or so, and this is the flip side. Like, they've always been whiny. That's the whole,
they're going to whine about, right, something.
Right. And they're going to, like, they're going to laugh at us when we're bad, and they're going to whine about us when we're good. Mm-hmm. So if the rest of the league is whining, just wait until the referee conspiracy theories start hitting.
Oh yeah.
Right around playoff time. Uh-huh. You know, when we get in and there's a 50-50 call that we get our way, mm-hmm, there's going to be, man, going to be full-fledged Zapruder breakdowns of Zapruder film, right? Of that. So this is what it is being a Laker fan. I love it. And, you know, it just means we're good again. If other teams' fans are whining about dumb crap like this, it means we're good.
Here's my thing. So the comparison right now that's going on is between him and Taco Fall, mm-hmm, right? And Taco Fall is getting, I think he even has more votes than Caruso. So Laker fans, get your shit together.
Yeah, really.
But The difference here is that Taco Fall is, he is the joke that people don't want to poke fun at, right? He is the 7'6 dude who goes in there. It is purely novelty. He hasn't helped the Celtics at all this season and probably won't help them at all this season. And the only reason he is getting these votes is tongue-in-cheek Celtics fans just kind of wanting to throw a wrench into the system, which, by the way, I'm perfectly okay with.
I mean, that's what we're doing. Like, look, like Caruso is a much better player than Fall, but like Caruso obviously doesn't belong on his merits in the All-Star game. So, yeah, but again, taking it way too seriously.
Again, I agree. The thing that bothers me here with Caruso is that, like, because he gets grouped into the Taco Fall thing, like, the thing that we've been, how much time have we spent begging for more Caruso minutes this year?
Yeah. A ton, right? Because he's actually a good basketball player.
Yeah, and if he actually got those minutes, I'm not saying he would belong in this conversation either way, right. But if he actually got those minutes, you would get a lot of these, holy crap, the Lakers scouting department did it again. How did they do this? Where did this guy come from?
From those folks? No, they'll never give us, you know, why I don't worry about what they say. Like,
from people
they're
that
not
I
honest.
Actually respect. Fair right, because the, there are voices that are voicing some of this, their issues with Caruso getting attention, and they're voices that I normally would respect or that I do respect. It's just that for this, I don't really get where it's coming from. It's a really cool story. This dude went undrafted, spent multiple years in the G League, backed up Tyler Ennis and then Rajon Rondo, two of the worst players in statistical NBA history, stuck with it anyway, and is now making the best of his opportunity, and is also like, yes, there's the headband thing, and he's buying into some of this a little bit, and he's having some fun with it also, but like, he's not, the way that he approaches the game isn't offensive in any way. Like, there's nothing that he does out there that should rub anybody the wrong way. It is literally just bitching because a Laker is getting more attention than, like, Devin Booker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it is. And, you know, the thing is if he was just a meme, his teammates wouldn't respect him the way they do. Like, just watch, like, look, we have fun with it. Right, yeah, that reverse dunk that he had the other night.
Oh, no, I was talking about the one where the fast break one where LeBron was behind him and then Dwight was behind him. Yeah,
you see all the joy on everybody, right? Like, and it's part of this greater thing. Like, Caruso is part of that, but he's not singled out by the guys in that, right? But like, the Lakers play hard. They suit up every night. They are really put a lot of effort in on the defensive end. Caruso is kind of an embodiment, as are a lot of guys on this team, of the broader Lakers culture that they're building. Like, this is a hard-nosed, you know, huge team. They're like, I don't know if you heard Kobe's comments. He's like, this is like the biggest team I've ever seen when talking about this year's Lakers team. But like, they play hard on defense, like, and he's a guy that's part of that culture, and he's earned that respect. Christian Rivas made a really good point the other day, because I tweeted that. It's like, just look at how the other guys on the team react to Caruso. Like, if he wasn't legit to them, they wouldn't be participating in some meme, right? Like, they'd be like, yeah, this dude's getting all of this shine.
Yeah.
And
that could rub some guys the wrong way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. And Christian pointed out, like, I don't think he said this. I don't think that it was always that way. And I was like, you know what? That's true.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. It's not like Caruso came up and everyone on the team was like, oh, shucks, this balding white guy that can dunk. Ain't he great? They don't care. He's just some G League dude, right? Mm-hmm. So he's earned it, right? Like, these are the guys we're supposed to celebrate in sports, like you were saying
you
earlier. Right? Like, this dude kind of gone through the grind and started out real low and developed his my player and, you know, added up points and got called up to the show. And now he's a contributor on a title contending team. So he's the type of guy that we normally celebrate in other situations. But because it's the Lakers, that's why I never look for that outside validation. It doesn't bother me. They're going to be a lot of ruined childhoods. And it's always going to be this way.
Yeah. And look, the other thing too is, so the gripe about Caruso specifically is that the national media is spending more attention. There are more tweets about Caruso than other stuff or whatever. But what those people don't understand is that those accounts that send those tweets, they are run by people who are employees of those companies. And the best way to remain employed is to garner engagement through those social network opportunities, right? And
Well, what are they actually complaining about? The Lakers fan base is too big and too passionate. Oh, shucks. Maybe you could.
Man, that must be terrible for the league.
Right.
It must be awful that there's an entire fan base. There are millions of people out there who are passionate enough to care about the backup point guard.
It's also something where, like, so this is, I understand the point of, like, our guys don't get enough attention, meaning if you're looking at it from another team, like Milwaukee's a team that really has a strong case for, like, how come every time they talk about Giannis, they talk about him
going
leaving
to the Warriors,
freaking 2 years. He's not even a free agent this summer.
Agree,
right?
Completely.
They have a very valid case at that. It's also like, it's how did we get to where we are, right? Like, we just started producing content, like, put it out there. And yes, there's this enormous, massive fan base that we could not be this without that. But the same thing applies to, like, go make some content, go make some videos, go write some articles, and really promote it. Like, the thing that people don't get about the Lakers is that this is a community that's 45, 50 years in the making.
Yeah.
And now it's this monster that you guys don't understand.
Yeah.
And there's nothing stopping you from, in 2020 especially, from creating cool shit that has to do with the Bucks or has to do with your favorite team. Go out and make it if it means something to you. If you don't have the time for it, if any other obstacles get in the way, it's not as important to you as it is to us, right? So shut up.
Yeah, I agree. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we're going to talk quickly about the Anthony Davis thing, and we'll leave as much time as possible for questions at the in the third segment. Vote for Alex Caruso. I'm telling you right now. Go wherever you are right now. Find a computer. Go to NBA.com/All-Star Vote or whatever it is, and go vote for Alex Caruso. We got to beat Taco Fall.
If he gets close, we got to start a marketing campaign to see if we can get him bumped up into that top two.
Yeah.
Or something. Probably can't. But just if we really want to piss them off, that would be quite wonderful.
Today's show is brought to you by the Arizona Board of Tourism. Thinking about trying to figure out a good spring vacation for yourself? Spring's right around the corner. Baseball is right around the corner. There is no better place to enjoy your spring and spring baseball than Arizona. Check this out. In Arizona, you got 10 stadiums. You got 15 MLB teams. The weather is just absolutely incredible out there. There you got golf, you got shopping, you got nightlife, you got everything you could possibly ask for, family stuff too, everything you could possibly ask for. And the best place to check this out, visit arizona.com/springtraining. Again, that's visit arizona.com/springtraining. Last time I talked about Arizona, I talked about Cody Bellinger and the Dodgers and all that. They have everything you could possibly ask for out of a spring vacation, whether it's for a weekend or a week, however long you want to go. Arizona, especially the surrounding area around where they play baseball, is just about as good as you can do. So again, check out visitarizona.com/springtraining. Again, that's visitarizona.com/springtraining. All right, so the latest update about Anthony Davis here is that he is lower than Alex Caruso on the All-Star voting list. And no, I'm kidding. No, the latest on Anthony Davis is that he is considered, he's very sore, right? The quote that I saw is that he is very sore, but still questionable. He's going to travel to Dallas to you know, potentially play or whatever. I would be shocked if he played. Shocked. Yeah. You saw way he was walking.
You were, the other night, you were kind of sarcastically, when Dr. Jen was on, you're like, you think they're going to list him as day to day? I'm like, no, they wouldn't do that. I should know better.
we know this team pretty well by this point, I think. Yeah. I would hope. Let's say, now, again, anytime that we talk about injuries, the caveat, the disclaimer that is always hanging over the head of the conversation is that we don't have all the information. So maybe Anthony Davis's bruise is just not as bad as originally thought when he needed the help of multiple teammates and a potential gurney to exit the court. But let's say, you know, it's a run-of-the-mill, boned, and I forgot what the...
sacrum, I think.
Sacrum, thank you. I want to call it... No, I don't want to. I'm not going to say it.
Is it... I saw the hamster running on the wheel in your brain right there. Like, go,
yeah, maybe go not. Ahead and go ahead and not make that joke. So Anthony Davis, let's say it's a run-of-the-mill bruised sacrum that he is dealing with right now. And as Jen came on here and said, as Dr. Brark went on Twitter and said, it's a couple week type of injury, right? Mm-hmm. If that is the case here, do you think it's smart to even tempt fate?
I mean, I think it's a pain tolerance thing, right? Mm-hmm. Which isn't to say that, like, he's a weenie if he can't tolerate the pain.
Yeah, no, I will hurts. Say.
Yes, right?
Yeah.
So, and yeah, if he misses, I think he should miss these couple of games. Mm-hmm. In my extraordinarily limited knowledge of this, I think that he should sit out both Dallas and OKC. And then the first game where I'd be like, yeah, it sounds close to right, would be the next game after that. But again, this is something that I like. They want to play. They want to suit up. Mm-hmm. They want to be there for each other. These things matter. They're important to go through the battles to, like, when you look at the guy next to you and he's battling a cold, or, you know, he's banged up, like, and he's going out there and he happens to be one of the very best players in the NBA. What are you going to do the next time that you aren't feeling so great? Yeah. You're going to fight through it. Fighting through it is a part of, like, winning a title, is like going through adversity and overcoming it. So long as there's not a risk of making it worse, I'm fine with him coming back as soon as they, and you know what, this training staff, like, how much better have the injuries and just the management of it been this year as opposed to seasons? We haven't had a lot of, like, wait, he's out another week, he's right. Out, like, at least the communication of that, and part of that's guys really wanting to play, but just all of that whole world, which is probably the part of basketball that I'm least knowledgeable in, and I'm really just a fan looking on the outside, is like, I feel a lot more comfortable with these folks than I did with the previous people.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know as much either, but, you know, you do... There is the comparison going on that you can point to, right? There is the
common sense stuff too, right?
Yeah, right, right. But, and that's kind of the perfect way to segue to where I'm at on this, is that just according to common sense, it doesn't make any sense for him to try to play these next couple games. Just
it's fair.
According it's to fair. Anybody who has had anything close to this injury will say that just, like, even sleeping hurts.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that you feel comfortable is in, like, the fetal position.
Really?
And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it's not great. And, you know, we talked about the potential risk for it getting worse. What happens if he falls that way again? Like, Anthony Davis literally can't stop himself from playing the way that he...
That's a good point. Yes.
This isn't like LeBron, who I think, who I would trust in understanding where to take his foot off the gas pedal a little bit.
Can I just acknowledge something real quick? Like, yeah. Anthony Davis plays hard every game.
Mm-hmm.
And how many guys, superstars especially, can you say that about?
Oh, I'm not just complaining about that. No, I think it's really cool.
I know you're not. I just, like, when you said that, it just
kind of dawned on you.
Yeah, Darius and I talked about that a little bit too. But, like, yeah, he, like, that's really cool, man. And I hope he's around long term, not just because of his skill, obviously, but, like, I I really appreciate watching this team and watching how hard they play and how they battle through those injuries. That's been something that's really been on my mind lately, and it's such a contrast to the previous few years where it's like,
Kawhi Leonard. Guys, I mean, what? Oh, I'm sorry.
I was talking about previous Lakers seasons, but yes, you can apply that to a lot of like Giannis is awesome in part because he just goes, man. He just goes and goes.
Yeah.
And that's part of what we loved about Kobe. And I think that this team is very much just cut from similar cloth, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, if they weren't the Lakers, they would be the most popular team in the NBA.
Yeah, and they still are.
I guess that's true. I also, though, so to just kind of to wrap a bow on this, I just pictured wrapping a bow on Anthony Davis's rear end. I'm not going to go there, though. Oh. Yeah, you know, it's been, I am so delirious. Has anybody listening here, when you raise a child, you start to think, and it's stupid that you ever think this, but you start to think, I'm starting to get this. She's starting to fall into a schedule. I'm starting to understand this. Pete and I were supposed to record today at 2, and then 2 went by, and then 2:30 went by, and then 2:45 went by, and then 3 went by, and then 3:15 went by, and Avery just didn't want to sleep. She has like the Lakers mentality of like, no, you know what? I'm going to fight through this adversity. I'm going to keep I'm going to keep on bouncing in my bouncer. I'm gonna, I don't care.
I have to defeat my opponent. My dad.
I don't care that one of my eyes won't open right now because I'm so exhausted. I'm just going to keep bouncing away. I'm going to keep whining. And no, screw your show. Screw Locked On Lakers. So, yeah, that's where the Anthony Davis bow in the butt joke comes from. I'm just delirious right now. But to kind of wrap up this conversation here, I guess my thing is it's not like a sprained ankle or a sprained knee where you have inflammation that can be set off by the change in elevation, right? So I think that's something that needs to be pointed out. That's why I think he's safe to travel. Okay. Or safer to travel than other injuries would make him. I think also, to the point that you made earlier, even if it isn't he's able or willing to play, as evidenced, and I'm not really thrilled with how they've handled the DeMarcus Cousins situation this year, but a lot of those guys have pointed to the fact that this former NBA superstar is still doing everything he possibly can to help the team win, despite being just kind of tied to the sidelines. And I think with Anthony Davis and the reason why he would still want to go, even if he can't play, is I still want to be around my teammates and I still want to try to help in whatever way that I possibly can, even if I can't play. And that's something that even while I'm a little iffy on the idea of, you know, the time that he's going to spend traveling, he could spend that time getting rehabbed. Mm-hmm. I also kind of respect it from just a purely team building standpoint.
100%, man. 100%. I really enjoy that about this team.
Yep. All right. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we'll answer your guys' questions. All right. First question here comes from Big J 2345678. I answered this briefly in a previous show or the last time I opened up the mailbag, but I figured, Pete, you'd be able to answer this a little bit better than I did. So they write, the show keeps getting better. Thank you. I noticed another line on the Lakers practice court the other day, an arc like the 3-point line, but only about 16 feet out. Any idea what they use that for? Maybe Pete knows since he's in the building. My theory was that that's for them to understand where their screens are going to be set. Like that's you know, a general kind of diagnoses on the court for where they want those screens to be set so that they don't get moved out too much further than that.
Yeah, I haven't been in the building nearly as much this year as I was last year. But that is a really good question. A lot of times you'll put spots on the floor or lines on the floor as a coach to like last year under Luke, there were blue X's on the floor in the dunker's spot, which is like halfway between the 3-point line and the free throw lane line. Also,
the furthest he wanted the Lakers to shoot from last year.
And so you have all sorts of coaching aids that you use. But let me ask. I will ask about that, and I'll try to answer that next time I'm on.
Yep. All right, let's go to the next question here. We've got a few comments about pineapple being on pizza. So let's go. Money Mike H writes, "Sup guys, my question for y'all is, what team would you prefer not to see or think would give the Lakers a hard time in the first round? The teams that are listed here are San Antonio, Portland, OKC, etc."
The team I don't want to see and the team I do want to see, like, all at once are the Pelicans. They're only, like, four games out. I think that would be a bonkers first round. Like, Lakers would win that for sure. But just in terms of the energy and emotion and all of that, they got Zion most likely coming back in the not-too-distant future. So seeing the kids, that would be kind of tough to go up against the kids. And I do think they have some potential for, I don't know. Remember the early OKC teams? The Lakers played them in the first round, I think. And it was when KD and Westbrook and Harden were all babies. And I'm not saying obviously the Pelicans guys are that, but it was just sometimes they would be like, these kids are so freaking fast and athletic. Yeah. And the Pelicans at their
that
very best
would be harder than you would want that series to be.
Right. That would be the team that I would like. I would be intrigued on one end, but in terms of the, like, hey, let's take the Lakers' legs out from under them, I think that would be a difficult series. Teams like Portland and San Antonio don't bother me as much. Obviously, they're, you know, better veterans and things like that, but they're not gonna run and run and run and run, which I think the Pelicans would do.
The bottom of the conference is bad enough this year where I'm not really worried about anybody the Lakers would face there.
Yeah, I'm not worried. It's just a matter of, like, the toll that it takes. For the next series and the series after that, like, how hard is the first round going to be?
Yep. So the next question here comes. Average American 2000 writes, "Hey, Anthony, I know it's been a while since this happened, but what did you think of Luka Doncic's Viva Mexico way? I loved it. I know he gained a massive following in Mexico because of it. Love the show and the two friends atmosphere you and Pete have. Love your rants, too. Keep up the awesome work." The only reason I'm answering this, and I loved it, but I had a story. I'm not sure if I've told you this story before. When I was like, I think I'd have been about 11 years old, and we have family in El Paso, and then right across the border in El Paso is Juarez, right? Mm-hmm. So we went and visited my family that was in Juarez, and then when we were coming back, obviously you have to go through immigration and all those things, and you know, fortunately my dad was driving, so usually they just get a look at my dad and it's like, okay, American citizen, he's good to go. But this time the guy leans in, kind of looks into the back or whatever, and what you're supposed to say is, like, you know, he says, American citizens, like, yes, we are all American citizens, so that he can kind of hear the way you say it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm in the far, far back of the van, and it's the summertime, so I have, like, I'm about as tan as I'm ever going to get. Back then, I got super duper tan because I was always outside. And he was like, American citizens, and I go, Viva la Revolución!
Oh, Jesus.
I thought my dad was going to throw me off the bridge. He was so, that's like top five, probably top two angriest moments my dad has ever been at me. He's like, you almost got deported. You. So, yeah, but I loved Luka Doncic, and he played for Real Madrid, right? So that's his kind of background there. It's Kobe-esque, you know. His tour through Europe is Kobe-esque, and all of the different cultures that he got a taste of. It's pretty cool that he carried that over.
Yep.
Let Shannon Dunk writes. By the way, you got to change your name. Shannon Dunk is.
I respect it. It's good throwback Laker history. I think about that sometimes.
Yeah.
Of like, I think it's Shannon our Brown responsibility sort of to like tell old stories mm-hmm. and keep just like story, because just something a little like that, right? Like, hey, remember when it doesn't seem like that long ago now, but it's like 10 years.
Yeah.
And then in another 5 years, it's going to be like, you know, there's going to be, you know, an 18-year-old Laker fan that has no idea what that is.
Right.
So whenever we can, man, we got to start like telling more like OG Lakers stories just to keep the oral tradition alive, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Although that's one story we could live without, probably.
all of it is part of our part of the history.
That was the worst slam dunk contest performance I have ever seen.
I was so hyped for him too, man. Me too. I love Shannon Brown. That, like, yeah. Bro, that block against Atlanta.
Oh,
yeah.
It where created the GIF. That's the Shannon Brown memory that we can kind of look at.
Yeah. And he was good. He was like a good contributing role player on a couple of title teams. But yeah, man, when he elevated, and that's where we get that great gif of the bench like watching replay.
Yeah.
But the actual it's unfortunate because that of the whole Lakers bench looking up has kind of lasted as an image longer than the actual block.
Yeah.
I remember watching that. The Lakers were up, it was garbage time. The Lakers had just acquired Shannon Brown. Which trade was he in? Was that
the Adam Morrison one?
Adam Morrison and Radmanovic went out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think
that was a really important one, too, because Laker fans had really soured on Radmanovic. Adam Morrison, obviously, he didn't really do much for the Lakers because he was broken. He was damaged goods by that point. But Shannon Brown came over and was a legitimately important piece.
Yeah, no, he really was. And that was like the first week or 10 days since we had traded for him, and it was garbage time. So he had finally gotten his first run, and I think it was Lamar or someone threw this flat angle pass that Stu Lance always gets mad about. Right. And so Mario West, a guard for the Hawks, jumps the passing lane, goes down court for a breakaway dunk, and Shannon Brown has some rocket up his ass and jumps 12 feet in the air, and the refs called a foul on a completely clean block.
It was so
because
clean.
It was just like so unbelievable to see that he did that. My favorite part of that was the reaction on the Atlanta bench, because when teams are bad, like, you know, there's they the whole code. Right. Yeah. There's a whole code in the NBA where, like, if your dude gets dunked on, you're not going to be on the bench like, oh, right. Like, that's you save that for the other team. Right. You got to stifle that. But when Shannon Brown did that, there were a couple dudes at the end of the Atlanta bench that were just like, oh, my God. Like, I can't believe he just did that. And that's what the Lakers bench is reacting to. So, yeah, Shannon Brown is I will always remember him fondly as a Laker.
I'll always that moment was great, and then I will contend to the day that I die that he had a steal and dunk on Birdman in that series against Denver that I think changed the series, because Birdman was contesting everything, giving the Lakers fits at the rim defensively, and then Shannon Brown dunks on him and the floodgates opened. I thought, if I remember, you know, that's just according to my memory, but that was a huge moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I hadn't thought of that in years.
Yeah. All right. So, hey, guys, back again with another question. Something that I've noticed happens a lot with Frank is he'll use up all his timeouts early and then have like one left with 9 minutes or so left in the game. I know during the regular season it's not as big a deal, but I'm concerned this will carry over into the playoffs. What do you guys think? I don't know.
I am concerned about that. One of my few complaints about Vogel is that. So hopefully it does not carry over. But yeah, I do think that that's a valid critique.
I think it's the kind of thing that you do early on in the season, and then as you go along, you hope that those, like, you really hammer home those lessons early on in the year, and then that makes it so that you don't have to do that as the season goes along and into the playoffs and stuff. But
sure hope so. Sure
overall, hope so. I'm always more of a fan of Phil's approach to timeouts, where the coaching, he said, always took place in practice, and he used his timeouts extremely sparingly.
Yeah.
Clutch Hutch writes, can you guys come up with a few tweets that Kobe and Shaq might have tweeted about or at each other? If Twitter had been around during their time together. Love the show. Support these good folks.
So I can't, that's such a great idea that I can't do it justice just off the top of my head, but I will be thinking about that all night tonight.
Yeah.
And so if I come up with something good, I will come back with that. But yes, could you imagine Shaq and Kobe in the Twitter era? Oh my God.
My question is, so are we saying, because there's a slight difference here. The difference between somebody who is good at Twitter, right, and an athlete who is good at Twitter, who is never as good as the people who are good at Twitter. So are we saying, like, what would be some good tweets if they had somebody who was good at Twitter fire those tweets off at Shaq and Kobe? No, or what would they send to each other?
it has to come from them, right? Yeah. It's got to be like who's the passive aggressive one there? Kobe would be more passive aggressive, I think.
Yeah.
And then Shaq would be more full on. Like, people forget about that dynamic too, is that Shaq was at the top of the NBA mountain,
yeah,
and Kobe worked his way up there, but was not perceived as that, even in the first title run, right? He was perceived as one of the best players in the NBA, like top 10, top 20 guy. And then by the second go around, he was a top five type guy, but he like was kind of this bratty kid that, yeah. And this, you also got to remember the way we thought about basketball was like, it was the dominant big man. The idea of that was everything. Mm-hmm. You better have freaking Michael Jordan and a bunch of great defenders, which is funny because those Jordan Bulls, we thought at the time, like, holy crap, Jordan's winning all of these titles without a true center. When in reality, there were a lot of like modern-ish concepts. Type concepts mm-hmm. on those teams. But we thought, like, you know, your big man was the center of your basketball universe, especially with the Lakers, with Chamberlain and Mike in mm-hmm. and Kareem and all of that. And so you've got this kind of upstart kid who's, you know, was a bench player the first couple of years of his career. And so Shaq was also a lot more fun
yeah.
than Kobe was in terms of his personality, and the writers loved him. And so that would be an interesting part, because a big part of the narrative at the time, like, it was controlled by a small group of people who loved mm-hmm. Shaq. Shaq would, you know, joke around with them. They'd write flattering columns about him. And then there's evil, selfish Kobe Bryant, right? What would that look like in the Twitter era, where the narrative is less consolidated in a few people? It's an interesting thing to think about.
So a couple general points here. Kobe would absolutely take the tweeting back and forth way too far, way too quickly.
Yes.
And at least once per back and forth, he would just send a picture of Shaq looking fat. Like, that would always be the final blow that he would try to strike with Shaq is, dude, you're out of shape. Get in shape. And then we can have these conversations. And then Shaq would always just, you know, like, scoring sheets and stuff. And that would have been fun.
Yeah, right. That's why they didn't get along. Like, Kobe didn't think Shaq worked hard.
Yeah.
And Shaq rightfully thought he was the top dog, and this dude was encroaching on his territory.
Mm-hmm. All right, last question here. It's more of a wider picture one. It's kind of a fun question, though. Vontae 35 writes, "Hey Anthony, what is Lakers exceptionalism to you and Pete? I think this is fitting, seeing as we started with the Alex Caruso conversation."
Yeah, when I think about it, like, internally, in terms of not how the rest of the league perceives us, but like what it actually is it's trying to be the best and unapologetically being the best and mm-hmm. doing whatever it takes to do that. It's also like the appreciation of the people over the organization. This is one of my main gripes with why I don't like Boston, even objectively, you know, removing the mm-hmm. Laker. Like, the whole idea that it's institutions, and like, institutions are only as strong as the people that are in them, and yeah. it's the people that really make them special. And so the idea that you're like, your front office is the star, like, who's the star of the Celtics the last 5-10 years?
Taco
Fall. It's been like Danny Ainge is kind of the face of that franchise.
Yeah.
Your GM should be the face of your franchise. It's wrong. We had Jerry freaking West, and he was never the face of our franchise.
Pat Riley. Like,
right?
Yeah.
It was all about the dudes on the court. Those mm-hmm. are the guys that are most important. And so it wasn't like, I really disliked the whole idea of like
management.
Owner. Yeah. Owner is above GM. GM is above coach. Coach is above player. That's not how the world works. Yeah. Right. The people who are
the NBA rarest, especially.
Right. The people who are rarest in this whole equation in terms of what they provide are the players. And it's not even close. Mm-hmm. They should have the most power. And I'm really proud of how the Lakers have always embraced that, while also, like, it's been a message of like, we are not trying to make the playoffs. We are trying to be the very best. We are trying to climb to the top of the mountain rather than a summit or two below it. Mm-hmm. So that's what Lakers exceptionalism is to me.
Yeah, I see there are two versions of Lakers exceptionalism. The version that you just described is the positive one. It's the one that drives the Lakers to be the team and the organization that I love to root for, and frankly, that I like to find a lot of myself off of, right?
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And now the negative or the pejorative Lakers exceptionalism to me is the idea that in order to be great, you have to have at one point been a Laker. Right. Or in order to have success with the Lakers, you have to have had or to be employed by the Lakers. You have to have at one point been a Laker in some other way. And I think if they opened up the pool of candidates that they usually draw from, mm-hmm. I think they would be able to continue to be exceptional in the way that we want to define Lakers exceptionalism, but with just more diversity in terms of the line of thought that gets them there. So I think it's
a fair point.
It's those two things, and it's by far the first one, right? And, you know, generally speaking, when people that are not Laker fans, when they think Lakers exceptionalism, it's the idea that, it's not carpe diem, right? What was the Latin phrase that they used when they were taking land for the greater good of like America, way, way back.
Manifest destiny.
Thank you.
All that, right.
So like when people who aren't Laker fans, that's not Latin, by the way, but like,
I think there's a Latin phrase. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. But like the people who are not Laker fans, the people who have a problem with Lakers exceptionalism is the idea that it is manifest destiny, that the Lakers, because they are the Lakers, they deserve Giannis and they deserve Anthony Davis and they deserve LeBron James.
The same thing as the Alex Caruso thing, Anthony.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, we are coming for Giannis. We are trying to get Giannis, just like we tried to get Kawhi, just like we tried to get LeBron mm-hmm. and Anthony Davis and Carmelo Anthony and Dwight Howard. We will always be coming for your best guy.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the point of sports. That's the
point. We are trying
to win. The point is to win.
We are trying to win.
To win the game or play to win
the
game.
That's right. Yeah. So, yes, Giannis is arguably the best player in basketball. Yes, we want him on our team. Yes, and when you're on our side, we are ride or die for you. Just look at Alex Caruso. That is the point. Yes, you are right. If you're getting mad at that, you do not get it in the first place.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I think what is fair to get mad at, if you are in those markets or not watching as an unbiased, well, not an unbiased, unbiased doesn't exist, but an observer that is not Lakers or Bucks fan, right? If you don't have a dog in the fight directly, I think a fair gripe is the way that the national narrative surrounding Giannis is just pushing him to a larger market. I think that's fair. I think it's kind of gross, frankly. And if I was a Bucks fan, I would really hate the you know media members who go on those kind of rants. But from like where I'm sitting, from where Warriors fans are sitting, from like any other large market, if you are hosting Locked On Warriors or hosting Locked On Lakers or Locked On Knicks or whatever, and you're not trying to figure out ways to get Giannis, then what the hell is the point of everything that we're doing right now?
That's it right there, man. That's it right there. Don't get mad at it. Like, don't get mad at the lion for being a lion, you know?
Yeah. Just like the Locked On Bucks fans. Like, if there's a way for the Bucks to figure out a trade for Anthony Davis so that you go in the opposite direction, like that's the whole effing point.
Duh.
Like, that's what we're having these conversations over. All right. This was a fun episode. Really good questions, really good topics here. And as always, I'm 1,000,000% here for Alex Caruso ruining the league. I hope he ruins the league all over Luka Doncic's face on Friday night. I'm looking forward to that too.
You need some sleep, Anthony.
I do. I really, really do. I do. Have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you on Monday.